Hello and welcome to another edition of the In Context podcast. This week we have Rachel again, and she will be interviewing a friend of ours, Sharon Dickens from 20 Schemes. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Recording in progress. Sorry.
thanks for joining. Now we're good friends.
And this is the point where we have to pretend that we're professional and not get sidetracked. I try my best.
We're good friends. We've known each other 10 years plus, I think, now. So I know a lot about you, but for those that don't, can you tell me a little bit who you are and what you do, Shabba, please?
So my name is Sharon Dickens, and I'm the Director of Women's Ministry for 20 Schemes. Everybody calls me Shabba, but mostly what I do is train and mentor women who are the women's workers in our church plants. Mm-hmm. And I do a little bit of women's work for my church on the side, but mostly as a really good church member.
And so 20 Schemes, if you just give us a little synopsis of what 20 Schemes is.
So 20 Schemes is a church planting and revitalisation ministry. So we plant churches and or revitalise in the most needy parts of Scotland. So you would call them housing estates, we call them schemes. Mm. And then we raise up and train the next generation of Indigenous leaders to then take them over. And so we are 14 years in, and second generation for churches, church plants, planting churches. And we're starting to see the emergence of that next generation of Indigenous leaders stepping up and taking over. It's very exciting.
Mm. We'll get to that point, but this all started 14, 15 years ago. But before that, give a little bit where you were at before you came into the role. Were you in the church? Or?
So I've been in I'm at Nidri Community Church, which is a housing scheme in Edinburgh, Nidri in Edinburgh. And I've been, I was thinking about this recently, I think I've been a member there 25 something years, maybe more than that. But I've been there a long time, and we were, I think even if you think about it nicely, we were a failed revitalisation. And so in Nidri, there'd been a work there for hundreds of years, but it was like most small mission halls. It was getting to the point where it was dying.
Mm.
And they went into partnership with one of the city centre churches to be replanted. And one of the city centre churches did, and what they did is they cut in hive 40 of their members and sent them over to Nidri. And so they got a nice new building, and we became a constituted church. But I would think that we probably were a failed church plan in denial. And so I think that we thought that we were doing amazing stuff, but we hadn't seen a convert in years.
Mm.
Most of our congregation didn't understand or live in the community that they were worshipping in. And so our minister basically said at the time, I'm not the person to take it forward. You need someone else.
Mm.
And we went looking for a minister, and Mez applied. Mez McConnell, one of the directors of 20 Schemes, who was my minister at the time, took on the role. I think at the time, I was thinking about this recently as well, we never as a church had 100% vote. And it's, I think, the first time that we actually all agreed that we were going to vote. And Mez came. So he came in the September. I can't remember how many years ago that was, maybe 18 or 19. And by the October, he was talking to me about coming, potentially doing some community work with church. So in April, they brought me on first as a community worker.
Hmm.
So I would do all sorts of stuff, run our community cafe, like do some women's work, do some community work. My church found the money to take me for a year. And when the year was up, our elders asked our church to if they could keep me for another year, and they said yes, so they kept me for another year. The third year in, they said, can we just keep her forever? And they said yes. And so I started off doing a bit of everything, community work, and then it became really evident about a year or so in that it was really two jobs. There was like the community work with the cafe, and then there was this women's ministry. And I said to Mez, this is two jobs. And he said, yeah, I know. Which job do you think is yours? And I says, well, I really want to do the community work and run the cafe. And he said, go away and think about it and come back when you change your mind. And so that was the birth of women's ministry at Nidri. And so we built a women's ministry structure and support, like care team in our membership over the next 4 years, really, under the headship of our elders, which then became, so we did that for about 5 years, me doing the women's work, training people coming up, like discipling those in the scheme. And then Mez, there's a the whole story of how 20 Schemes started, but the he like saw this article in the paper where it was a voting thing, I think. And we had a couple of interns, and it had 50 of the most deprived areas in Scotland and how they were voting. And I remember he said to the interns, go and find out how many of them have a gospel centre church. And so our interns went and did the research and came back, and the answer was like none, apart from us. So I mean, it was quite stark. And then he went to America and met Matthew, and all this sort of stuff happened. And suddenly that thought of 20 Schemes, that vision started to be born. So he came back and said, like, I think this is where we should be doing. And our church went, yeah, okay then. And so I did start. So in the beginning, before 20 Schemes, I was just, my role was being a first a community worker, then a women's worker, and then pretty much any other hat he put, like they wanted to do, I would wear. And so I figured my first 5 years, my job changed every 6 months. But my primary role was always women's work, like raising up. Took us about 4 years to build our women's ministry and have it established. It definitely, and then for it to become second nature so that it's so part of our DNA, I probably think it took probably another 2 years, so 6 years. Does that answer your question?
So going from your role and your remit to
Yeah.
then kind of obviously Mez coming back, you've got this vision for 20 schemes, he sells it to the church, you're all going with it. What did you have? I mean, you couldn't have conceived at that point what how things look now.
No.
Did you have any conceptions or?
I mean, we had a vision. Like, I mean, it was an exciting vision. The thought of like, I mean, he would have had 50 schemes, but 20 seems more doable. But even that, at the time, you were sitting thinking, like, this would be amazing. I mean, I don't know what the stats are like for England, but Scotland is nearly half of the nation in Scotland lives in a scheme. And I remember, so from my childhood, and it's only when you look back in time and you, with some foundation and hindsight, you see God's hand on your life from the very beginning. But I remember like having a desire to want to go to Sunday school, and a scheme was unheard of, and seeking that out, and occasionally going to Sunday school and being present in some churches, but no one told me the gospel till I was 17. Like, and so my brain would think like that. I remembered like some of the early days where we would meet women, and when I was a women's worker at Nidri, I remember two ladies who, one said, I remember her saying to me, I desperately want to become a Christian, but I know that I can't read and I'm not very smart, and so God wouldn't want me. And then this other woman who'd spent her whole life being fueled by Catholic theology, desperate for Jesus, but not really understanding it. And her life was carnage. And then when she got saved, it never instantly solved her life, but she had Jesus through the process, like of discipleship and change. And so when he came and said, I think we should do this all over Scotland, my brain didn't go, oh, we'll have 17 sites in like 14 years. My brain went, there's women like that all over Scotland, never hearing the gospel, not rejecting Christ, when they've heard that, they're just not hearing it. Like there's women out there that are like these women and like me, who desperately want someone and nobody's telling them the gospel. And so my brain went, half my nation are like that. They're not hearing the gospel. And so for me, that's the bit that like I found easier to grasp than the how we're going to do this, because I didn't know how we would. I mean, the thought of like how you were going to build a structure that would make sure that every church was independent while we served them, like operationally, or how we were going to train their women all over a nation and still make it feel like it's tight as two. I didn't, those things were too big to answer. So I couldn't imagine what that was going to be like, but I could imagine the wee women sitting desperate to know some hope and somebody telling them it. That was easier for me to grasp.
And within the process, was there reservations from people, or was everyone kind of, what do you think that, and were the challenges as you kind of put those foundations forward for going forward?
I think our congregation were, so the answer is yes and so yes and no. And so I think the truth is that there would be something wrong with a congregation if people didn't ask questions when you come along. I mean, we're not a big church. We're already at capacity, and there's only, at that point, I think we've maybe had 54 members in a church with a really tiny budget, like most people, too many staff we were already struggling to pay for. And so, but God had done some amazing stuff preparing. And so our congregation didn't change. So what I mean is the people were still there, but as church members, we changed. So when you saw people come in and that were not there before, who were from the schemes and were saved, and you saw them growing, we all kind of knew this was God. And so I think there'd been something wrong if we didn't have reservations. But also, we'd seen God do such amazing things, it was much easier for us to step out. So in our church, I think that it was the comp this and it was a different cell, because God had been doing a work within us as a congregation for a while. In the bigger world, I think that I mean, you were selling a vision where we told people about 20 schemes and we hadn't actually done anything. So that's a harder task. That bit was hard. I mean, people thought I don't know what people thought. I mean, and like for a while, I think everybody thought we had a chip on our shoulder. I mean, we do. But I think that the biggest surprise was I thought we'd have to persuade people to want to work in partnership with us. And what happened really quickly was we had this massive queue in the list, and we didn't have enough people. And so
And
I think the answer to that is complicated, because it depends on who's answering it.
And I know that you've had a lot of support, prayer support, financial support over the years from America. Why America? Like, why was were there were the other churches? Other evangelical churches in Scotland wanting to partner with you, were they seeing the, or was it a harder sell? And
It's a different sell. And so I know there's sometimes people have an assumption that like all our money came from America. In the early days, it didn't. Like when we started, we had 3 months' salary. Like that literally was it, 3 months' money. And there was one person who gave us from the UK, who bought this vision and saw where God could take this, who invested in us and enabled us to have the freedom to then like launch what we did. And so part of it was, yes, we did have American money, but the Americans give differently than us. I mean, it's different tax-wise for them as well. But it was like you didn't have to persuade. I mean, Americans love Scotland for a start. Everybody's like Scottish. But like Americans, like they bought the vision And they would invest in people. And so you would see, like, they would invest in our Indigenous fund, and they would give money. So they really grasped hold of that really quickly. Whereas in the UK, my experience is that we as Christians give differently. So America were fine giving finances to people, or funding people to be trained into like leadership. Whereas in the UK, I feel like the church, we give primarily to projects. So there's this, if you're running a project, it would have been far easier to find money if we'd have been running like some form of like project or activity where it was the focus, and we were like bringing Jesus in on that donkey. So if we were running like a food pantry or some other like district nurse project. So I do think there is a difference between Americans and UK funding. And so we found, so I personally found that like in the UK church, that when we focus on projects and we then become, I don't know if it's a way of society or how we've run charities, but we become task driven. It's so when we approach the charities, the big charities, they want goals and targets. Like, and how can you, I mean, God, if you like truly believed God's the one that calls and saves, like how can you say, oh, I guarantee five people will be saved and discipled this year? Like, but I mean, you could have 300 people coming through like our community cafe. And so in the early days, it was difficult to tell our story in the UK because we give, I feel that, I mean, I know that the tide is changing, but we do give differently. And also we expect, so when we give to a church plant, as again in the UK, and so, sometimes in America, we want these models where in 3 years they're going to be independent. Like, so if we give you this amount of money that we can give you 100% today, and then next year we'll give you like 50%, and in the third year we'll give you 25%, and by year four you'll be independent with a congregation of 120 people, and they're providing your ministry salary. In a scheme, we're never going to be able to sustain that. And the chances are you could have a church that's 120 big, and there will be some church people in there, and from a different demographic, and some scheme people. But they're never going to be able to financially sustain the, even in the early days, they're never going to be able to sustain it in 3 years. So yeah, the models for church planting were out there. So I think that we think differently in the UK. We have these, so we like projects, and we have these set packages on how church planting is done. And it's not in our context. It doesn't really understand the deep need that we've got. When it comes to pastoral care and discipleship, whereas I think the Americans really got that because they saw it from a missional mindset. Does that make
But
sense?
probably less risk averse as well, aren't they? So if you're saying that they're putting their, money towards individuals, I know my experience has been sometimes, unless, like you say, they think they're a dead cert in the UK, they're not going to give the money. And the reality is, you can't say that about anyone, can you?
No, but I find it fascinating. We've got like, particularly in the UK, and even when it comes to education, we think that they all have to be like university like educated or going to Bible college. But actually, when you look at so when it comes to funding them, you're like, well, they need to go to Bible college, they need to get a degree. If you look at the stats on how many people after they've gone to Bible college and are still in ministry 3 to 5 years later, it's like, it's mind-boggling. Where if you look at like the stats for ours, like the people that you've trained that stay and have longevity, the it's like we want something. It's like we want to back you if you're a dead cert. They'll back you if you think if they think you're right. Now that I think about it, we'll back you and invest in you if you like are if you're like the gold, and we think you're going to be an amazing leader. Like the trouble, Mez used to say this a lot, actually. My pastor Mez used to say, for our lot, you have to dig through a lot of muck to get to the gold. So, I mean, our lot are like, it's not ground zero. It's like they've not got that foundation that most of the leadership is rising to. We had to teach them to get there. So it takes longer. So everything took longer.
So going from those first infancy years, knowing a bit about you, a bit like me in terms of it controlling, how did you deal with like a small number and then freedom to like branch out and leave,
Call me
give
a
it over,
control freak, Rach.
giving it over to people?
Yeah, I am. I mean, the thing is, I am. So I really am a control freak. But I'm also, which I think makes me good at my job. Like, so it's how I would spot things and make sure that things balls don't get dropped. But I also, from the very early days, we've been told that your job was to train someone up. Do your job, hand it over, and move on to the next thing. So I've been doing that in my life for decades. So before 20 schemes, and before Nidri, to be fair, as the women's worker, I mean, I'm very much like you. I've been working in the voluntary sector, churches mostly, and church projects mostly, and so usually around homelessness and community work. And because they're charity led and funding, like most of the contracts were like 2 years, you were to go in and I liked it when it was messy, which is like, so I like it when the project is messy and needs fixed, and to train the staff. And then once it's running and it's ticking over, I get bored and I want to go somewhere else. And so I'd been doing that for years. And so I am a control freak in that I like everything to be done, but I am not a control freak that needs to keep everything for themselves. Fair team, I always have. I mean, I know that most people don't understand that about me. And there's times I've had to work that out in my character because, and I've had to put that side of me to death. But even on the care team that we created, Nidri, was based on the fact that I'm not superwoman and can do everything. You needed this whole bunch of people to help. And when we get to 20 schemes, I might be the director of women's ministries, but I have a team I ask everything about, like all the time, to help me function and make sure I do things right. I've never been, I've always been part of a team and never been a solo player. And so, yeah, I am a control freak. But I've tried to put to death the bit that's not helpful and use the bit that is helpful in that. Yeah, I mean, I literally, you create something, you get it working, you find the person that you're training to put it in, and you move on to the next thing. But
Just digressing slightly, when you know some books that you read about certain ministries and or individual missionaries or whatever, sometimes it reads like a you know, I started off, you know, it's all perfect, and you think, oh, it must be just my life that things go wrong in, or the ministries, you know, I'm not jumping out of bed every day, thankful that the Lord's given me this job. It might be just me, but as you go over like the 14 years, what's been the hardest times of like in 20 schemes, as in, and for yourself as. Because things have gone at a pace sometimes, you've told me, haven't they? They've gone like quicker than you can almost manage. You're thankful for those, but it's also hard. What do you think the most challenging things have been?
I think so from a family perspective, it's been that nobody else in my family is saved, and so they don't understand this life. They don't understand what is the most significant part of my life. And so I think that from that perspective, and I don't mean 20 schemes or Nidri, what I mean is, I mean the God stuff. And so I have relationships with people at church, or I mean like yourself, that are a different depth than I would have with family members. But I would desperately want to have them with family members. But they're not saved unless you understand the God stuff. You just don't get it. And so, that personally would be my greatest challenge, would be to, and in and is it would personally would be that. And in that, the balance of how do you then balance serving the Lord and making sure that my kids don't feel like, I mean, they're adults now, but even now I still make sure that they know that they are significantly important and haven't been sidelined. From a ministry perspective, like as a women's worker, whether it was a 20 schemes or at church, it's when something in somebody else's life is gone immensely wrong. Those have been the darkest of moments, and they've been difficult. So when you're grieving a loss, but your part of your role is that you're helping others how to grieve that loss, that's been quite hard. Not people talking about really big things you don't have an answer for. So some of those really hard subjects where you're just like, I actually don't even know what to say here. I would say those have been the hardest, darkest times. And then you worry about whether you've said the wrong thing. And it's so catastrophic. And you know that your words are weighty. You feel the weight of what you've said and whether you've said the wrong thing. And so from that women's worker perspective, and then operationally from the monster that is 20 schemes and overseeing the admin side, it can be all consuming. And so I found the hardest thing is, what has been the hardest thing, Rach? I think the hardest thing is not being able to be absolutely honest with everybody. So that circle of, I don't mean that people aren't trustworthy, but there's things that you know that you can't unhear or can't not think about, that just because of it's either confidential or you just can't tell anybody. And so those things are hard. I find one of the hardest things is always, I feel like sometimes I'm always the nag, I'm always the bad guy, I always say no. And I feel like sometimes you're crushing somebody's soul when you have to be the ones telling them something they didn't want to hear. Those things have been, everything else is like, it's a season and it's been difficult and like you never think you're going to get through it, but like there's times, well, you know this, there's times where it's been like the darkest moments, and like people are, they're all believing what they want to believe, and you know there's that very few people that actually know what happened. And you can't defend, you can't, it's pointless. It's pointless defending yourself. It's pointless saying anything. It's pointless. You just have to sit and wait. We've had some really, really difficult times when sometimes it's gone Pete Tong and you can't say anything about it, but there's been that very small few people. Thankfully, my elders, because 20 Schemes was a ministry of Nidri, my elders gave me permission to speak freely to certain people. I mean, you know this because you were one of those people. And so they gave you outlets, and my one-on-one, Miriam, was a good outlet. But that the bigger our organization, sometimes the smaller that group became. It was a bit isolating, and it's quite hard if you were single because it's not like you could go home and tell your husband. So I found that hard.
I think the operation, like having your employees in your congregation as well, can be difficult, can't it? Knowing when are they an employee, when are they a friend, when are they a church member, all of that is difficult to navigate at times, isn't it?
And it's hard to like, it's weird because I don't know if this happens to you, but even if I'm hanging out with one of the girls, like I texted Tash yesterday and said to her, "What are you doing this afternoon?" And the first thing she said to me is, "What have I done wrong?" I'm like, "Mate, I'm just asking what you're doing. What is a free afternoon? What hang out with you?" I'm like, "Wait, why is that?" And so I feel like sometimes when you text, what you have to go, "Are you free? There's nothing wrong. I just want to have a conversation with you." Because I think there is, it does blur lines. I mean, it's hard when that's fine when they're part of your congregation and everything's working well. It's when it goes wrong.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
at some point, it always goes wrong. Somebody has a hard time, or sin comes in, or whatever it is. So as long as it's working, it's fine. It's when it doesn't, you're right, it doesn't work, it gets hard. So
So
yeah.
looking at the kind of the joys and the provisions and everything that God's provided, where in terms of how many schemes are involved now, how what's the
I think we're saying 17 sites. That doesn't mean that there's 17 churches. What that means is that there's that either pre-plant, so pre-plant, plant in, or established. They're either in pre-plant stage, where it could be they're having talks on the ground, or they've got a team on the ground that are slowly working, or then they get to the planting stage, where they're like working up a core team and they're getting ready to plant and are planting, and then from planting they get to the point where they're like heading towards being an established church with elders in place. And so yeah, 17 sites are either in any of those three stages, in or revitalizing.
So going back from the early stages, like you said, you couldn't have conceived, but what you did have in your mind is like you were a woman who hadn't heard the gospel, who wasn't going to have an opportunity to learn the gospel, to where we are now, 17 potential. How does that kind of feel? And obviously there's going to be more where, you couldn't have conceived that, but here we are. So taking the excitement from that initial, not really knowing what it was going to look like, to kind of being a part of the whole journey to now. How
I definitely have what I would call happy thoughts. And so, see, I get excited when I see things like Benny Anderson and Sam Wilkins and Tasha Davidson all like leading ministry, because they're all like scheme Radjis, and I'm excited by that. That really encourages my soul, because like, I mean, I remember the first time I met Tash, and so, and I've known Benny a long time, but first time I met Tash, and she said, oh, I believe in Jesus, but I didn't believe in God. And I'm like, how does that work? To the point where she's just about to finish her master's and she's been leading ministry for a long time. I'm excited by that. So that is, I find it helpful to reflect on the things the good things God has done, because it brings me joy. And then we do this once a month. We do this women's workers. One month we do an alternate. So every month we meet on Zoom, and we do this prayer meeting once a month, once a fortnight, once a quarter, no, bi-monthly. That's the word I'm looking for. And then the other one we do training. And the last time we did our prayer one, we had represented pretty much every women's worker in 20 schemes, so most of the schemes. And it was so encouraging, because we were asking for, so we were working through the framework of the Lord's Prayer, and we got to the bit about like we were working through things we're thankful for, and every scheme we're going, oh, we're so grateful. And it was things like, oh, we got our building and it's got through. But what really came through was, it was so amazing, we had two baptisms on Sunday, or we've got this guy working towards his baptism and he's going to get baptized next week. Or so when I sat back and I thought about it afterwards, every single scheme that was represented on that Zoom call were either all having a baptism, had just had a baptism, or were working towards baptism. I thought, like, that's what it's about. Even Tasha, I was thinking about this recently. So Natasha has been saved for 14 years, and she has been through all our programs. She's an Indigenous to Nidri and is now leading ministry. But like last year, her brother got saved. Like, and so we were in a prayer meeting a couple of Fridays ago, and I was sitting there looking at this Zoom meeting, because it was all over Scotland, 20 schemes, and Jason's in Orkney praying and Tasha's on the Zoom. And I'm sitting there thinking, because I met them, because her Tasha's mum's my was my is my friend. That's how I met Tasha and how I met her kids, Jason. And so I was sitting there thinking, God is amazing. Because I remember texting Taff afterwards going, how cool is that? You and Jason were on this Zoom call. Like, that's basically the bit that gets me excited, Rach. All those years ago, like when nobody like was hearing the gospel, like folk in the schemes are hearing the gospel, getting saved, and even though it's carnage at times, a lot of the time, are being discipled and grown into mature Christians, and then they're growing other Christians. You're like, that's amazing. So that, yeah, that was cool. The Zoom meetings when you see the generations there.
And how do you think
Generations.
personally you've grown in your own faith?
I think I'm less of an idiot than I was before. Sorry, Scottish words, but less of an idiot. When I've always loved Jesus and I love serving, so that bit was dead easy. I think that before I started at 20 Schemes, before I started at Nidri, I've always been square peg round hole, like never fitted. And it crushed my soul at times. And I think that I'd become despondent about leadership and elders. And I think I'd had a massive, like, feminist agenda, like, chip on my shoulder because I thought, like, we were getting quashed. And when I started to work through that in the beginning, I realized that the foundation of all that is I didn't trust God. So it took me a long time to realize that. Either I trusted God or I didn't. And either I trusted the men that he appointed or I didn't. So that sounds like it's a really easy concept. That took me a long time to like. It took me a long time to work through that. I also think I was also quite angry, and so I was angry. I mean, I'm feisty. I mean, feisty babe. But, I think that I was much more angry then, but I was much more angry at like the injustice of everything. Like I was angry because of what circumstances life had done, and so it took me a long time to work through that. I mean, I do still think I'm angry, but I mostly get angry when my sin issues about control come out and I have to put that to death. I think my biggest lesson that I've learned is to trust God. And so no matter what the diff I have to talk to myself about that regularly. So whether it's like, because I've been ill for such a long time, so whether it's like coming through the chronic illness or trusting God with my kids or whatever's happening at 20 Schemes or people that you genuinely care about that are going through carnage, I have to remind myself either you trust God or you don't. Like either he's in control or he's not. Like either he is sovereign or he isn't. Like what is it that you believe? And so I think in the beginning I would say all those words and I testify to them. I think that now I would affirm them because I know it to be true. And so I think that's what's changed. I think I said the right thing, but now I see it and I believe it. So.
And just finally, another part of your ministry and something very close to your heart is Ragged School. Do
I love Ragged School.
you want to tell us a little bit about Ragged School?
So Ragged School is when I was, let me start back at the beginning. I'm a schemey person, so I've got to tell you a story. So before I was saved, I was an architectural technician. And so if you wanted to be an architect and be all academic, you went to university. But if you wanted to be practical and work out how things worked, you went to technical college. And so what you did is you worked 4 days a week and you went to college one day a week and you put into practice everything you learned on a daily basis. And then you'd have a technician over you who was more experienced teaching you how to do things better, and you learn on the job. That's what ragged school is for theology. So some people are academic, and that's amazing. I'm not very academic, but I still have a master's in theology. But I passed it by the skin of my teeth. Not because I'm not smart, but because I'm not academic in the slightest. And I think for some people, particularly scheme people, we're much more hands-on practical learners. And so Ragged School is like like technical college for theology. We go in and it's big stuff, so you learn all the hard things, but it's done in bite-sized chunks with lots of discussion and experienced people helping you work it through, and then you put into practice on a daily basis in your in your ministry on the ground with experienced planters and women's workers and gospel workers around you. And so, I mean, the standard path for ministry in the UK was that you leave your place that you got saved and you go off to Bible college and you learn a lot of theology and theory, and then you'd go and put it into practice somewhere else. So we were like, why don't you just learn while you stay? And so that's why I'm excited, because instead of being around like a square peg in a round hole, what we did is we just changed the shape of the hole and like made it. And so robust, absolutely solid, academically minded in the sense that we take on big chunks of theology and we handle like important stuff and we wrestle with it, but we just teach it in a different way, more practically. And then we look at three things, which is again why I'm really excited about it. When we train people, we look at their practice, their character, and their training. So like all three things have to be in alignment. It's no point knowing like some really deep and meaningful theology if you are not applying it to your life and practice. And so for us, it has to be the three things. They've got to know stuff, be applying it to their life, and looking at how they practice ministry on the ground. So you teach by showing, you teach by doing, you teach by getting alongside. Yeah, I love it. I love it because it's a different way to teach the same thing.
Brilliant. Thank you. And just finally, so going forward, what's the future holding for 20 Schemes? You now branched out to Orkney, just been up there last week. Beautiful. Looks on the surface like it's idyllic, but behind, and it is lovely, but behind the scenes, it's got all the same problems. So what's the plans going forward?
I think it would be more of the same. Like we are bigger than we were before, and so we now have an East of Scotland, a West of Scotland, a North of Scotland hub. So the same thing's going on. We're still joined up, we're still connected, but it's still local church serving local church. And I mean, the further north you move and the further west we move, there's more people in need and schemes just in different areas. So you're right, Orkney looks amazing, but it's got the same issues as any other scheme, but just in a different way. And it's the same for mainland Scotland. Like when you look at the Highlands, the scenery is stunning. And so it is beautiful. It's what you see on like all those travel shows. It doesn't mean that the depth of like despair isn't hidden behind that. And so yeah, I think it'll be the same. There'll be more churches being planted, more Christians being saved, more new believers being discipled, the next generation will be being continued to be trained to rise up and serve. And then I'd be really excited before I retire if one of these like new Indigenous, the younger Indigenous leaders like the Sams, the Tashas of life, then like start taking over from us and start training the next generation. How good would that be?
Brilliant.
That's my plan. That's my hope and plan, Rach.
That's when you can put your feet up.
I think I'll just go play a church plan. I'll be like, I'm retired. What could I take part in?
Mums and toddler group.
I think I'd probably have to go for something very random. Nidri's got this bizarre like bingo thing kicking off with a Bible study afterwards. I think I could be into that.
Oh, well, thank you for joining me.
Oh,
Appreciate
I
all your
appreciate you.
expertise. Thank you.